Okay, this is Brad Schimmel. We have Doug LaFleur and Adam Donacek on the line, as well as Executive Secretary, and the rest of the gang is apparently there too. So I'll call the meeting to order, and the first item on our agenda is the minutes from the January 19th meeting.
This is Doug. I move to approve those minutes.
Okay, I've reviewed them, and I'll second that. Any discussion regarding the minutes? All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Matt.
Aye, Brad. Okay. Then we do have some loans. Let me get the right page here. What did I do with that page?
Only three loans.
Oh. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. Okay. Are these loans approved for proper public purpose, Jonathan?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Then,
Doug, I would move approval of those loans.
Okay. I'll second that. Is there any discussion regarding the loans?
I have a quick question. For the town of Marshall, they're borrowing quite a lot of money, about $2.1 million. What is the TID number one project that they're financing?
Tax exempt district. Did you hear that question?
I did not understand hear the question.
Yes, the question is on the Marshall loan. What is it? It's a fairly.
Well, I should know, I guess, but
oh,
I'm sorry,
Doug. The TID stands for Tax Incremental District, and the project involves improvements to a business park.
Okay. I was just curious, and it's a big loan. It's 7 years. I just was curious about it. So they're putting in a business park with so-called TIF funding.
Correct.
Yep.
It's an infrastructure loan, Doug, for improvements in the
Thank
park
you.
To make them able to sell their land.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Any other discussion? Okay, then all in favor say aye, please.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Brad.
This is Matt. I'll be no.
Okay. So we've got two ayes and one no, and the loans are approved. We didn't have any old business listed on the agenda this month. So moving to new business, we've got some items. I think items 4, 5, and 6, Matt, you asked for those to be on, right?
Kind of. I think 4 was actually added by the staff.
Okay.
Let me add to that, Brad. Matt asked for a summary of VCPL return on financial assets going back as long as we could reasonably compile it. We could perhaps go back further, but we provided this document that goes back to 1990, and it's a comparison, if you will, on our spread to the average treasury rate. And you'll note that we're doing quite well in recent years and in past years not so well. And in order to explain this a little bit better, and Matt did not ask for that, but
we thought
we ought to add these few charts, and perhaps Tom and or Rich could elaborate on it. Just take a couple minutes to walk through them.
Sure. The first chart gives you the general movement of long-term interest rates over that period of time, and so that the chart that's labeled FRED, the 7-year Treasury constant maturity rate, it's a jagged line, but it's starting out at 8.5-9%, and over that period of time came down to 2% and below. So that's the general interest rate climate that existed over this period of time. It was a period of declining interest rates.
That's right. I can remember the good old days back when we could get 10% on our investments. Uh-huh.
Was that when your buddy Jimmy Carter was in office, Doug?
I don't know.
Just kidding you.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tough time to borrow money because I remember paying higher mortgage rates. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So the next chart in essence, compared our return against the 7-year Treasury rate. And so, again, going back to 1990 and bringing it forward to today, so in 1990, the Treasury market yield was about a point and a half higher than what BCPL was getting. And over time, those lines crossed to the point where now BCPL's yield is about 2 points higher than that Treasury.
I think that's a direct function of leadership within and board oversight that has been very good in the last decade and wasn't arguably as good in the previous couple of decades.
Okay. Well, this chart really is a positive statement about what we were able to do. You know, for years, the two rates were very similar, but when the Treasury began to fall out, we were able to stay up there. And
right.
I think that we owe some applause to Tia Nelson and Tom German and Rich over that last, last 7-year period or so.
It's really about 10 years, and I agree with you, Doug. Of course, I wasn't here, so I won't claim any credit at all for it.
The next chart then looks at that spread between BCPL's rate of return and the 7-year Treasury rates. And as you're going forward, that spread is going from negative to positive and climbing over that period of time. So in essence, it's explaining the difference. And the next chart, in essence, is looking at three different things. It's looking at longer-term interest rates in red, shorter-term interest rates in yellow, and BCPL's earnings distributions. And over that period of time, we already talked about how the long-term rates were coming down, but we didn't talk about how precipitously the short-term rates plummeted after 2007. So in essence, that yellow line is describing what was going on with the SIF. So from 2007 on, anything that was sitting in SIF was earning next to nothing, and yet our earnings distributions were still remaining strong and actually climbed the last 2 years. And then the last chart.
This is the one that we prepared at Matt's request.
Correct. And so over that period of time, over those 25 years, it describes our total assets under management, what our investment income was, our cash return, and comparing that against the 7-year Treasury rate, and then describing the spread between our return and the Treasury rate.
I think it's important to note, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rich, but this is an apples-to-apples comparison in that we're not including, because we couldn't include in previous years, unrealized gain.
Right.
So this is a cash return, not in actually the yield is a little higher than that in the recent years to the extent that we've had some capital gains that we were able to realize.
That's right. Since we started investing in bonds over the last few years, we have had some opportunities to achieve some capital gains on those bond sales, and those capital gains are not included in that chart.
Had we included them, it wouldn't have been an apples-to-apples comparison.
Well, this would be a conglomeration of several of the graphs into this chart.
No, it's just a real simple computation, actually, is AUM, is assets under management, divided into the actual earnings that year yields, the percentage yield. And it's
okay.
Some of the record keeping 30 years ago here wasn't as good as it's now being done.
Thank you, Denise.
But we were certainly able to make this gross comparison, which is equivalent to the kind of comparison that Squibb makes, except that to make it an equal comparison, we could not include realized capital gains. Otherwise, we would skew the numbers a little bit more in our favor than would be fair on the comparison.
Okay.
Hello, this is Doug.
Yeah.
I should know this because I was on the board during this last 15-year period we're looking at. But seeing this last chart,
I am reminded, unbelievably, how our assets climbed from a little less than a quarter of $1 million up to $1 billion. And remind me, someone, where did all that money come from during those 15 years?
Let me try that. The largest proportion of that money came from the sources of revenue that inure to us via the Constitution, Doug. Obviously, there are two principal ones, the unclaimed property and fees, fines, and forfeitures. Those grew pretty fancily in the 90s. And into the 2000s, especially in the late 90s, municipal governments increasingly started creating municipal courts, which eliminated that slice of income for us. Meaning, to the extent that you create a municipal government, it's no longer a state fine and forfeiture, so we don't get our proportion. And how many municipal courts are there now, Tom? Something like 400?
I think there's 420 or something like
okay.
that.
Okay, so that's one reason for the big increase, along with unclaimed property, and I'll talk on that in a minute. But it's also another reason for an evident tapering off in the rate of increase of contributions to our fund. And if you notice that, we can start to see a trend from 14 to 15, and I'm told that 16 might continue that, where we're actually yielding an earnings of almost less than what we're distributing from our I'll rephrase that. We're getting a contribution from these two sources, unclaimed property and fees, fines, and forfeitures, that is actually less than the amount we're distributing from our earnings. That means, yes, we have the money to distribute our earnings, but our fund is not growing at CPI anymore. The unclaimed property piece, I think was, and correct me on this, Tom, but I believe it was benefited materially in recent years by the change from mutual insurance companies to those companies going public, and a whole boatload of unclaimed property shareholders in those mutual companies. And that money came to us after a time. So both of those now are not growing like they used to. But they are the responsible cause primarily for the increase in the asset base that we have today. Is that your explanation?
Yeah, that's very good. And, of course, it's a little disconcerting that it's not going to grow as fast as it used to. And I've had some concern over the last few months, before you were here, Jonathan, about what the unclaimed property and where it's coming from. And, of course, it's been transferred now from the Treasury to DOA, I guess it is.
Department of Revenue.
To revenue. And Tom and I have discussed this, and this is not appropriate right now, but I would like you and Tom to talk about this some, and maybe we can find out more about why we're not getting the unclaimed property revenue that think we should be. But that's something we can talk about later, but I wanted to put it on the record anyway.
Let me say one thing on that, Doug. We don't see, or at least we haven't been able to analyze and identify with certainty that there's any real diminution in the rate of unclaimed property inuring to BCPL, having as a result of the change from treasurer to revenue. There appear to be a little increase in costs over at revenue over what was the case at the treasurer's office, but that's pretty trivial. So I think the bottom line of that is that this, if you will, serendipitous mutual fund insurance change to now a stable state is more responsible for that bump in the income to us in past years, and now it's back to normal.
Okay.
Or more back to normal.
Okay. As I recall from our conversation in preparation for the meeting, the team is actually working on a long-term plan to try to stabilize our assets and return as CPI changes.
Correct. Do you want me to elaborate on that, Brad?
I don't think so this meeting. As I recall, you don't have a formal plan ready yet, but you've got some some broad structures that you're starting to work with.
Correct.
Okay. So, any other discussion on those attachments relating to item 4? Okay.
I want to say thank you to Denise and Rich for digging this out. I think it took the better part of 2 or 3 days because of the kind of arcane record keeping in years past, which is not the case with Denise at the helm.
Wow. Well, yes, thank you then. I had no idea it took that much time. Okay. Well, then moving on to item number 5. This is a discussion regarding limitations and impact of the Land Bank Authority statute. I did have a chance, since first seeing the agenda items last week, to do some research myself and to engage the assistance of one of our very smart young assistant attorneys general. And, you know, in relative to this conversation, there certainly are significant impacts, limitations on what we can do with the money. But I'll go ahead and let, am I correct on this one, Matt, that you requested this item?
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. JB brought this up back in 2009. And my only point is this was one statute of the Land Bank Authority. Land Bank was much bigger than just that single statute. And this is the only component of it that I personally would like to see changed. Right now in SIF, or in our Land Bank Fund, we've got a little over $2 million. It's about $2.2 million. And the way that statute 24605 is done is that, according to Tom, we can't do anything with it. We can't invest it in bonds, loans, so we can't make, you know, loans or anything. So my only point is, I think as commissioners, you know, this, I'm not saying we can get rid of Land Bank Authority or you can't buy land. This just says we have to. And if we don't, right now we haven't been proposed anything to even buy. And so my concern is, let's say we sell $10 million worth of land in the next year. That $10 million would just have to sit there making basically nothing. And so I think it would be wise of us, and I'm not going to force anybody to think about it too much, you know, vote today, but maybe Brad, I know you looked into it, maybe Doug could take a look into it. I think it would make sense if the legislature, I don't know if it would be this year or maybe in the budget, that they maybe wipe out that component that requires us to. Because it still freezes freezes up to buy it. It just says we don't have to let it sit in account forever and make no money.
I think that if we had a change to the statutes that made this a may rather than a shall, we could expand those investment options. We're accumulating money, and do we expect that, you know, as the money comes in from land sales, do we expect that as we consolidate and try to get more valuable land, that we're ever going to eat away at this balance that's in that account, or is it likely to always be a pretty large balance?
Tom, I would anticipate that if the board would approve land bank purchases, that balance would go away. The land that's for the most part being sold is land that would have lower values per acre, and productive, accessible timberland costs more per acre to acquire. So, yes, I would anticipate that balance would go away.
And I think a corollary to that, Brad, would be, in that process, the total acreage held by BCPL would go down.
Yeah, this is Doug. The situation was not supposed to become serious because the general plan was to consolidate land, and it was assumed that we would be purchasing land in consolidation of our holdings. But now we're not able to do that because the state treasurer is opposed to any purchase, and the attorney general has not supported. We had one fairly serious purchase a few months ago that would have consolidated a very nice piece of land, but both commissioners voted against that. And so unless we're able to start purchasing land, we have this balance issue.
And I guess I'd ask my fellow commissioners to think about that and decide if we're going to proceed continuously to vote against land purchases.
Well, this is Matt. I'll just speak real briefly to it. I think, obviously, Doug was relatively accurate there. I don't support land. My only point, and I would say this, I think, to Doug, is that I think as commissioners, the three of us being statewide elected officials, that we should have the option to buy the land but not be forced to buy land. And if right now maybe there hasn't been anything we wanted. And I think, is this fund, if more land, because I'm assuming we're still selling land, this fund will keep going up and up in this. And it just doesn't make any sense to not invest it in loans or other stuff. I mean, we could do it.
This is Doug. I have no problem with the concept of revising this so this fund is, where this balance is in a fund which is segregated from our other funds because of the nature of it, but that we would allow it to be invested so we could earn some interest on that money while it was being held there. The reason, that, as I remember, and maybe Tom can help us on this, was that the concept was that if a land purchase option came up and we had this money invested in some instrument, we might have to sell it quickly. And maybe Rich as well can comment on the problem in getting that asset liquid, getting it liquefied, if that's a word, quick enough that we can make the land purchase. I guess that's all. Does that make sense, right?
Oh, I think there's kind of two conversations. One is whether it might make sense to seek a legislative change to give us a may instead of a shall in the statute, and I guess we can pursue that further. And then the other is, you know, on the issue of land purchases, I agree with the treasurer. We've discussed some potential land purchases for a little while. I held off on that because the legislature was considering some changes that, you know, I didn't want to do things that would undermine what they were looking at doing. But then also some of the possible purchases at the time just didn't seem attractive. Although that may change, and we may end up reconsidering some of those. But anyway, it is pretty clear that there are strong limitations on us under the statute as it currently stands. We can either keep moving forward with it as it is or try to pursue having a change. I think it makes some sense to give us the ability to, the flexibility to pursue different options.
Brad, I think that makes sense, and I don't think we have to make a decision today necessarily, and maybe the staff up there could kind of come up with changing the language to make it, you know, as you say, may versus shall, and we'll let the legislature do what they want with it after that.
Okay. I agree with what you both said, but my question still is, and no one answered it, is if we did change the statute, and if we put this $2 million into an investment similar to our other principal, how quickly could we get some of that money if we needed it to make a land purchase?
I think Rich could answer that. We'd have to put it into something that's rather more liquid if the intent was to have it available for land purchase when the opportunity arose.
And I think if it was more liquid, it would now be earning the 4% the treasurer has alluded to is how we can make a lot of money with that.
No, it would not be earning the 4% that we could come accustomed to, but it would be earning more than the SIF. And so there's probably a net positive there. If I can go one step further, Mr. Chairman, I think it's incumbent on us at the staff, and Tom and I were up north this week again, or last week, and we're going to be able, you know, we can't deal with land purchases as onesies, one-offs. There really has to be a conscious strategy on enhancing the value of the holdings and increasing access thereby and consolidating And so I think we need a little, it's incumbent on us at the staff level to give you a better plan of approach. And we've got John Schwartzman working on that, as with the staff up in Lake Tomahawk, and our realtor guy. So we'll probably be able to make recommendations on certainly the policies and some identification of parcels. Secondly, we met with Oneida County Forestry staff, and they've asked us respectfully, would we please revisit the issue of a land swap with them, because they have a lot of difficulty with some of the parcels that we own that they completely surround. It costs them more than they think it's worth to do line control when they want to make a timber cutting. And they really have asked us respectfully, could we please reconsider doing a land swap? We agreed that we would meet with them after the April election and the new forestry committee has been formed. And in the meantime, we'd have a staff-level engagement of discussion on what those parcels might look like. So we would expect, members of the board, that we would be able to come back to you in March and April with a little bit better picture of what our opportunities are. And for your consideration, it's not a decision that we can make. It's a decision that you make.
That
all right.
That sounds good. Great. And I thank you for that initiative.
We can move on if that's. I'm fine to move on.
Great. That's just one more reason to look forward to April.
I want to keep skiing.
Then item number six, discussing of potential or possible investment options.
This is Matt. If you want me to talk about it quick, or did you want to talk?
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'll be brief. I don't want to take up your guys' time, but I just wanted you to take a look at these documents, basically, I don't know if you had a chance to peruse them already, but basically, obviously, when we've been showed some of these documents about the percentages of change from, like, 1990 to, you know, current day, and the deviation from where the seven-year treasury was, one thing that was a comparison was, and it was more or less an apples to apples, fixed rate to secure, you know, our trust fund loan program versus the treasury. But obviously, I think we need to talk about this more and more, and I've had a good conversation with Jonathan about maybe figuring out if we can have a single day where, you know, the VCPL members get together and block off a decent period of time and maybe go closed door, where we can talk about our different investment options as we look to an apples to oranges comparison, in that we now have, under the Bucks bill, we have an expanded universe with Prudent Investor. And I guess if you read, SWIB just put out their earnings thing for last year, and, you know, they made next to nothing last year. But if you look at their 20-year average over at SWIB, they've made 7.4%. So we have $1 billion in our common school fund right now. If we were to take the next 20 years and extrapolate that out, that's $74 million a year. We made, according to the numbers I was given, about 4.5%. That's $45 million a year. So, I mean, we're talking anywhere from $25 to $30 million difference. Now, understandably, I understand in the past we were limited to fixed income, but we're in a new day here, and I just want us at the VCPL, the commissioners and the staff, to start looking at how we can kind of change some of this up and add different investment options going forward, because we're not only going to be in loans and we're not only going to be in bonds.
Okay. I think that there were some calculations that Tom and Rich had done that make some modification to the comparison that you're drawing. Is that accurate, Tom?
Yeah, what we were trying to do was compare the rate of return from SWIB on a cash basis against what BCPL had done versus the all-in performance of SWIB, which includes unrealized capital gains. Rich, did you?
Yeah, I did an analysis of the variable trust fund returns by SWIB from the year 2000 to the year 2015 relative to the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands returns, and we actually outperformed the variable return by a slight amount, and our return did not include any of the capital gains that the SWIB returns actually did. And so
you know, our performance relative to the TWIB return since the year 2000 have actually been very well. Now, Matt's idea that with the expanded universe that we're going to be able to accept more risk into the system and therefore have higher expected returns in the future, I think is correct. But there's an entire process that we have to go through in order to develop the appropriate programs and policies in order to do that.
Okay. And that work, I understand, is underway as well, to develop a long-term policy for this?
Yes, it is. I should have a draft investment policy available internally here within the next few weeks, maybe something that can be presented to the board within the next 60 days or so. But we also have met with executives from the State Investment Board, and they would like to help us promulgate those policies. And so it's going to be a little bit longer time frame than the initial draft report, but we should have something within the next few months.
Matt and I are meeting with the SWIB leadership, I believe, tomorrow. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, and I mean, I understand some of the stuff was different because of the fixed income, but I mean, SWIB's rates are accurate. They can't tell us anything other than what it is, and there's just no way to compare it. Over the last 20 years, they completely beat our percentages. There's no, I understand we weren't working under the same investment options, and whether it was unrealized capital gains or whatever, they made way more money than they did. Their fund grew. So I just want to make it very clear going forward, I would rather work with SWIB as the investment board more and see what kind of input they can give us, because I don't want 20 years from now to look back on it and they'll have made 7.5 and we'll have made 4.5. But, you know, we'll make those decisions going forward. But I just think as members, the commissioners, myself, Doug, and Brad, you know, it's our responsibility for this. I think we look into it as we go forward.
Okay. This is
Doug. Go ahead, Doug.
Hello? Yeah, I just have a clarification. Without trying to go through all these documents in front of me, I thought I heard two different things. I heard Rich say that we have been outperforming SWIB, and I hear the treasurer say that they've been outperforming us. Can someone fairly briefly clarify that for me?
Yeah, there are an awful lot of qualifications on that. It was a short time frame that Rich put out, and he's comparing it only to their variable fund. And I think a better comparison, we'll find out tomorrow, Matt, is that SWIB staff feel that we're doing better in the fixed income area than they ever could. And so that's a niche that we're quite adept at, but we have not had the experience in equity investing.
Okay. We're also talking about whether we're measuring it in the course of the last 10 years versus the 20-year span.
Correct.
That affects our performance. So, okay, I mean, we've got all the figures. I think we know what it looks like, and work is underway to develop an investment strategy for us. So we'll look, hopefully be looking at over in the next 60 days or so. All right, any other discussion on item 6?
Nope, that's good.
This is Doug.
Yep.
Again. One brief sort of final comment from my point of view is I now understand that better, and I think the short-term comparison for we look good versus the long 20-year is a more relevant situation, because historically, and again, I've been there, we didn't pay much attention to this 20 years ago, and that was our mistake, and we didn't have Rich on the staff. But more recently, we have paid attention, and we did have Rich. So I think the short-term comparison is more valid. And I'm looking forward to the report. Thank you, Brad.
Okay. Now, are there any future agenda items anybody would like to add right now? Okay. Then we can move on to the Executive Secretary's report.
I think I can be very brief, because I think I know somebody on this board that wants to catch a flight to Park City. Is that possible?
Possibly.
I think I've done enough talking. I would just say that we really had a good visit to Mud Lake, you know, Lake Tomahawk, and Tom and I hike through the entirety of the, well, it seemed like the entirety of the Mud Lake Woods at 5 degrees below zero. It was pretty cold. I should have worn another layer, but we kept moving. It was fine. And it's just a beautiful wood hole. What's more important, though, is that the Haven presentation by Burns from UW Stevens Point and most particularly John Schwartzman was well received, and the timber people that were in attendance indicated their agreement with the select cut approach that they are recommending. There weren't, by no means were all the timber representatives at that meeting, but I'm told that we have not had any negative comments come in, even though we solicited for comments. So based on that, we're, I believe, going to go ahead and mark the entire wood in March and then put it out for bids for harvest next winter. The expected yield from this cutting could be in the neighborhood of $100,000. More substantively, in 15 years, we can expect a yield of equal or greater amount. One of the nifty things that appealed to me is, and I didn't understand this until we actually were up there and could see it, you have a lot of younger, well, not that much younger, they're probably 200 years old, smaller diameter, 19 and 20-inch trees that are high-quality veneer at present that we want to take really good care of. If we open the crown too much, those trees would tend to start sprouting and diminish their veneer value, and the trees would go from, $50 a log, from $800 a log today, which is an 8-foot log, down to $50. And these trees have as much as 40 feet of trunk. So you're looking at, you know, 3 and 4 logs and 5 logs in a tree. So a tree of that value in veneer is really important. So we will be harvesting some mature veneer trees now that arguably could be left to go longer, but their value is never going to be higher than it is today. And secondly, we will be keeping the overstory for some of these very large trees that don't have economic value per se, so that they can continue the shade to encourage the value increase in the veneer trees that we're going to save for the next year's harvest, and next harvest in 15 years. When the industry experts heard that entire explanation, I can say that those that were there were impressed and said, yeah, I agree with that.
Very interesting.
It really
thank
was
you for the
walk. It was really worth the walk. I'm having a lot of fun with this gig, so thank you all.
All right.
I'll move adjournment.
Thank you. I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, Doug.
Have a good, safe trip, Brad.
Yeah. Have a good flight.
Thanks. Bye.